It's time for Hoag Health Radio. Here's your host, Deborah Howell.
Hi, no, it's not Deborah Howell. This is Melanie Cole filling in today for Deborah Howell on Hoag Health Radio. My guest is Dr. Robert Selby. He's the program director for the Hoag Pancreas and Hepatobiliary Cancer Program. I was going to say that perfectly. And we're talking about pancreatitis. Welcome to the show, Dr. Selby. Hello? Well, we seem to have lost Dr. Selby for a minute. And, you know, I know that we all think about pancreas problems as being very scary. And so I know that something that we want to make sure that we do is to keep ourselves detoxified. And when we have to do something to keep ourselves healthy, that's really what it's all about. And so when we think of pancreatitis, which is really going to be an inflammation of the pancreas, and so when we talk about this, we're going to talk about symptoms. And so, Dr. Selby, are you with us?
I am.
Oh, sorry. I thought that we lost you for a minute there. So welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about pancreatitis.
Well, the pancreas is an organ that sits about the mid portion of the abdomen, and it sits a little bit posterior towards the spine. And its function is in digestion and has a hormonal function with insulin. And so the digestive enzymes that the pancreas produces are in a form that's inactive when they're in the gland, but then they're excreted into the intestine. They become activated, and they're very powerful enzymes. And the problem with pancreatitis is that there's a premature activation of the enzymes within the gland, and then it becomes a process of self-digestion. So it's almost as if you put hot lava or burning acid directly into the pancreas, and then depending on the severity, it can spill over into other perimeter tissues, whether that's fat or other organs, and cause inflammatory change in them as well. It's a very sudden, acute process. So it's not hard to distinguish it from pancreatic cancer because it happens so quickly. And when it does happen, the pain is extremely severe in most cases, and almost always brings the patients into the emergency room or to their doctor.
So this is something that comes up very quickly, and it's very acute. So what might somebody notice? Are they going to be vomiting? Are they going to have severe abdominal pain? They might confuse for appendicitis, that kind of thing?
Well, I think the distinction about what acute abdominal emergency, it could apply to any one of them. So from the patient's standpoint, it's not one where you say, well, you know, maybe it's not so bad, I'll just ride this out. It's really something that gets their attention immediately, and is oftentimes they'll describe it as the worst pain that they've ever felt.
Wow. So that would send us to the emergency room. What are the tests that we do to find out that you have pancreatitis?
So for pancreatitis, there is an enzyme that's measurable in the blood is usually the test that we use that is what we call diagnostic. But then the real test of importance for the surgeons and the managing physicians is often a CAT scan, because that'll tell us what the extent of the inflammation is. Are there any associated fluid collections? Is there any of what we call devitalization or necrosis, which means death, of either the pancreas or some of the peripancreatic tissues that might have been a victim of this inflammatory process?
Okay, so once we've figured this out, and whether they've had a CAT scan or an MRI and you've figured this out, what is the first line of treatment? What's the first line of defense here?
In about 90% of the patients, the cause is either alcohol-related or gallstone. And for those, and the majority of patients don't need any acute operation on the pancreas itself. The majority of them will have less than pancreas necrosis or less than actual tissue destruction of the pancreas, so they don't need an operation. In those patients, refraining from alcohol, and in the gallstone patients, it's removal of the gallbladder, will eliminate the likelihood for the disease to reoccur. And so the disease becomes, in the vast majority, a self-limiting problem, so that nothing has to be done except for the patient to recover. Now, in a small percent, the necrosis is so severe that part of the gland has been lost. Some of the tissue around the gland itself can also die. And these then set up a different evolution of events where you have a large pocket of necrosis or dead tissue that then liquefies often becomes infected and turns into an abscess. And these patients need surgical drainage and sometimes diversion of this of the secretion.
Now, because the pancreas, Dr. Selby, is so involved in, you know, its insulin production and diabetes, is there a risk then after an episode of pancreatitis to then have a sugar problem? Is there a risk of diabetes?
In the majority of patients, not, which the majority in this case means probably 90%, but those 10% that get a severe attack will have enough necrosis that they'll lose volume of the pancreas, and then they'll lose function of the percent that's proportionate to the volume that they've lost. So if you lose half your pancreas, then you only have half the capacity to make the insulin. So heavier patients will then become diabetic. In patients who have even more extensive necrosis, they may be diabetic regardless of weight.
And is this something that then goes away? I mean, because you mentioned alcohol as a precursor to it, and gallstones, you know, and as I understand it, there are certain medications, even cigarette smoking. So what is the long-term sort of effects?
Well, if I could just rephrase the question for you. So in the majority of patients, it's self-limiting, and there are no issues as long as you eliminate the cause. In that significant minority of the patients, and that's why we take a specialty interest as surgeons through our new Hoag Center, in that minority group of patients, they have severe problems that often last them for several months as we wait for the necrosis or this dead tissue to mature, liquefy, and then proceed with either external drainage through X-ray guidance or internal drainage with an open procedure. So those patients are the ones that we're focusing on in our center, because there isn't a lot of specialty knowledge about how to handle those particular patients. The timing of the surgery is critical. The approach in the surgery is also critical sometimes, because you have to make sure that you've eliminated all the pockets of necrosis, dead tissue, as well as fluid, and that you've established good drainage for all those different collections, and that the antibiotics are appropriate. So in this select population of patients, we're really talking about several months of care that involves antibiotics, nutritional supplementation. Oftentimes they're in the hospital for weeks as this process evolves, and it's a very difficult time. And as I said, since there's not a lot of expertise in most community hospitals about these kinds of problems, it's important to emphasize the specialty nature of a bad attack of pancreatitis.
So when you're stabilizing the pancreatitis, and sometimes people are in the hospital for weeks, this is a painful condition, right? So we're keeping them reasonably comfortable. And is there any digestive things that people have to, you know, can expect? Do we fast? Are we on IV fluids?
So in the beginning, all pancreatitis patients are kept without anything by mouth. And as I said, for the self-limiting ones, that just lasts a few days or so. For the bad ones, it becomes a more chronic problem, and so we look for alternate routes of feeding, and generally the intestinal tract is not accessible for feeding because the inflammatory process has set up such a reflexive change in the bowel habits that you really can't feed them. So they get intravenous nutrition. So we have to give them all of their calories, fats, carbohydrates, and proteins through the vein. So they're often fed through the vein for several hours a day, and that's how we keep abreast of their nutritional requirements. The pain itself is usually not so severe once the initial process has subsided, but the disability that's related to nausea or, you know, dyspepsia is a good word. It's a word that basically says anything that's wrong with the digestive tract. They just don't have normal motion from the top to the bottom of intestinal contents, so they really can't eat, and that process stays with them for, as I said, weeks sometime.
Now, if somebody has chronic pancreatitis, then, you know, then is that something that we work on digestion? Do we use digestive enzymes, changing their diet? Does any of that affect this?
Well, that chronic pancreatitis is really a different animal than acute pancreatitis.
Okay.
It has a different presenting sequence, and I think it's probably beyond the scope of this discussion. It also is a specialty problem, but it's the management is so much different, and the what we call the pathophysiology is so much different from acute pancreatitis that it really doesn't fit into this discussion so well.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Selby, and tell people more where they can find more information about pancreatitis and your center.
Well, you know, our center is established. It's a combination of the Hoge Outpatient Centers and the USC Division of Hepatobiliary and Pancreatic Surgery. And we're in the 1520 building as our outpatient activities in a clinic that we share with some of the specialty endoscopists, and then we operate at the Hoge Hospital exclusively.
Well, thank you so much. This is Melanie Cole filling in for Deborah Howell, and we'll be right back.